court of law, when you have someone accused of a crime and you have witnesses to the event, you want to be sure you have credible witnesses. If you don't have, a good smart lawyer can poke a hole in the testimony of a witness that's not credible. If he's shown to be somebody who's careless with the truth, or he's testified something that's in conflict with what he's testifying here in court about this very incident, then that's all brought out and the witness is discredited. He's not a credible witness. What about these witnesses? I want to ask you a question. What did they get out of their testimony? Did it make them rich? No. Paul said, I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I'm instructed both to be full and to suffer need. It didn't make rich men out of them. When Paul preached at Corinth and Ephesus and other places, he helped to support himself by making tents and selling them. It didn't make them rich. What else? Did it make them famous? No, it made them infamous. They were everywhere that sect is spoken against, it was said. Paul wrote one time and said, we are accounted as the offscouring of the world. Didn't make them famous. I'll tell you what else. Did it protect them from harm? No, they died unnatural deaths. We can rely on the testimony of history. All of them but John died an unnatural death. He's the only one that's accounted to have died of natural causes in his old age. Peter was thought to be crucified in Rome, upside down. Paul was executed, no doubt beheaded. Other apostles, James was beheaded by Herod. The 12th chapter of Acts gives us an account of that. These men didn't get rich, they didn't get famous, and it didn't secure their well-being in society. It didn't do any of that. What did they get for their testimony? And yet, in spite of all that they suffered, all they endured, they didn't back down. They didn't recant. They didn't say it's all a lie. It's just not so. In fact, when Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 15, that great chapter about the resurrection, he said Jesus had been raised from the dead according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen of Cephas and then of the 12 and above. Then he said, of above 500 brethren at one time, of whom the greater part remain, though some are fallen asleep. So these 500 he mentions at one time were witnesses to Jesus after his resurrection from the dead. And most of them were still alive when Paul wrote that to tell it. He said, some of them are dead now, but the greater part of them are not. Surely if it were all a lie, there'd been at least one honest person in that group that would have stepped forward and said, no, that's not the way it was. That's a lie. It's a fable. They're witnesses. And they're credible witnesses. These eyewitnesses to what took place. The best kind of a witness you can have is an eyewitness. Somebody who saw it, somebody who heard what was said, what was done. Credible witnesses. Now there's something else about this I want to notice with you. And that is that there are certain criteria for establishing any historical fact. This gets back to the idea of the witnesses. In establishing any fact of history, I don't care what it is, whether we're talking about George Washington and the battles that he fought to help secure our freedom in our country, or World War II, or World War I, or any of the recent conflicts we've had, or the Napoleonic Wars, or the Gallic Wars, any of these are historical events. And in order for those events to be certified, verified as fact, there are certain standards that have to be met. First of all, we're dealing with something that happened in the past, or it wouldn't be a subject of history. Something from the past that has occurred. But that isn't all. Something from the past that was sensible. Somebody had to see it, or hear it, or touch it, or taste it. Somebody had to observe it with the physical senses in order to report on it. If nobody had seen it or heard it or touched it, there wouldn't be any evidence for the veracity of this claim that this was a historical event. Well, there's something else I want to notice with you about that, though. The event must have left some kind of a marker, some kind of a monument or a memorial from that time to now. What is a monument or a memorial? In Washington, we have several of them. The Washington Monument. We have the Vietnam Wall, where people come there and they go down that wall looking for names, the names of the people that died in the Vietnam conflict. And there are people who are looking, searching for a certain name, and when they find it, you can see the emotion that grips them when they see that, and they stand there, and their memory takes over. They think about the loved one that name on that wall represents. It's a monument. We have monuments to various things. There are Civil War monuments all around the country, both in the North and the South. So these are monuments. They are reminders of something that occurred, something that actually took place in the past, that somebody saw or heard or touched. Now, there's something else. That monument must have persisted from then to now. It must have endured from the time of the occurrence until now. We have a record of it, and that record has persisted. Let's go back now. See if I can back this up. This, I don't know if I can or not. What? Okay. I got it. Think. There we go. Let's go back to these. Let's try this out now, folks, on the resurrection of Christ from the dead. The resurrection of Christ is the central truth of the gospel system. If it's not so, then none of it is so. If Jesus Christ was not raised from the dead on the